I was thinking about this morning before the call. If somebody said, hey, if you're in your shop all the time and you never stop thinking about this and you can make another $100,000 a year over what I make now, I wouldn't take that deal. I don't want that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, that money isn't important to me.
Pronunciers, welcome back. We've got John Gibbs from Logo Daddy out in the St. Louis area. He's back again. He did an incredible episode before, so much so that we wanted him back. But this time we're talking a lot more about time flexibility. What changed in his shop 7 years ago that really made him want to enjoy his life outside of work more, and how he does it? What does the org structure look like, and what would he do if he went back again to redo it? So we're going to dive into this episode, but first, we've got incredible partners that put this show on every single week. First up, GraphX Source. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, GraphX offers leading industry options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and other shop management suites when it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, digitizing, back office admin, and a bunch more. They've been doing it for 40 years. Give it a try. PrintavoPod24 is a coupon code to get 50% off your first vector, SEP, or digitized order. That's PrintavoPod24. Easyway has a monthly giveaway program that we've been talking about for a while, and they are still going. Go to easyway.com/giveaway, and that is how you can be entered to win the $250 prize that they give out every single month. Easyway makes reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their systems, chemicals, equipment, and their awesome support team. So you can always reach out for help there. Last but not least, Stalls. Use the code HUSTLER20 that gets you 20% off your next DTF transfer order. If you're ready to take custom apparel to the next level, Stalls is the leader in heat printing solutions. Whether you're a small business just starting out or an established brand that is scaling, Stalls makes the hustle easy. They're here to be able to help you heat press and profit. They've got equipment, transfers, and support, plus incredible in-person events. Check them out, stalls.com. All right, let's jump on in.
How many podcast mics do you think you've gone through in your career, Bruce?
Way too many for our little show. Way too many.
Always the a deep, new toy.
Yeah, exactly. The deep dive has been way too crazy. John, you got a new toy I saw.
Which one? Which one are you talking about?
Which one's your favorite?
I got a few new toys. I bought a new truck recently, and that's been a lot of fun. So, but I bought that because I was fixing up an old truck that's almost just like it, but it was kind of starting to add up really quickly. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just go buy a new truck that has all the same things on it and works better. So an old Scout that I'm restoring right now, but it's like the bill was quickly racking up on that. So I kind of like, we were changing over motors and all kinds of things, and I was like, oh, let's just keep it original. It's a lot cheaper that way. And then I went and bought my other truck. So
love it. Love toys.
Yeah.
Steve's looking for toys. We're always looking for toys. That's that Scout Motors.
International. It's an old International Scout. It's got like a little four cylinder in it. It's like a convertible truck. It's going to be really cool when it's done. It's like a little beach cruiser.
I've seen ads for it, but I didn't.
Yeah.
How old is it, John?
Mine's a 1970 Scout. And so it's, and it's crazy. They look like the old Broncos, but they're like a little more valuable just because they're more rare. But it was literally, it was just when I was 16, I bought it, and it was my first car. And I like, cause I played drums, and so I could haul all my drums in it and, you know, do all kinds of things. And then I, you know, that's what I said in that post when I did my Facebook post. I talked about, you know, when I say I used to live in a truck, I actually lived in that truck for about 3 months because I was just stuck and didn't have anywhere else. And so I've kept it my entire life, and it's been outside of all of our shops, and it's rusty and old and ugly. And I've had employees be like, why is that truck sit out there? And I'm like, well, because I used to live in it and now I don't. And so this year I was finally able to send it to a builder who's restoring it for me. And so It should be done actually in about 3 or 4 weeks. I'm pretty stoked.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's actually, so that leaves me perfect. That was actually one of my questions. I didn't know you were living in the truck and I wanted to ask you more about that, but you share this. I'm going to pop it up on the screen real quick. I'll just read a couple highlights, but you shared this post and that was what made me want to reach back out, which was because we've had John Gibbs on the show before, which was a really great episode. You were super transparent. I know people reached out as saying that was an awesome listen. John, you wrote, as a milestone birthday gets a little closer, I've found myself reflecting on my incredible life. When I look back, it almost doesn't seem like one lifetime. You raised in two incredible people that taught you hard work, how do you love, and then you had your son who faced multiple brain tumors and the courage and faith changed him, changed you forever. He taught you what real strength looks like, lost your grandparents and went through that. And then you were able to meet my wife and how she was able to really be your greatest teammate and allow you to build things together. And from what you tell me is 100%. Gotten you into crazy, insane shape, which I can't yes. imagine a John Gibbs not in crazy, insane shape, but yeah, okay.
At one time he wasn't.
So. This morning as I walked the city called home, I look out at the stadium that I couldn't afford to as a kid. And thank you for being a part of this journey to my friends, family, team, and customers. And my best advice, take the trip, take the chance, take the risk, believe in yourself and love the people and care for your body and mind. Why I like this so 100%. Much partially was a story that was, you know, you're being very open, which was really cool, but also something I think I brought up before was the thought of reflecting really well. And I don't know if we all reflect until we're able to physically calm down, whether it's a health issue or whether it's a, we've had folks on the show that had a marriage issue and like there's things that forced the calm down. I wrote this post on Fabric about reflecting because when I was watching this Tom Brady documentary, he spends 20 hours a week, half of, you know, a work week, just watching film and just watching more and more tape, not, you know, on the field, not in a gym, not studying plays or something, just thinking back, reviewing. And it was so similar to your perspective. So, That's where I wanted to start it off on. I guess you talked about the part sleeping in your truck.
Yeah, it's crazy. I just, you know, it's weird. Like when I grew up, like I said, my grandparents raised me, and my grandfather was an entrepreneur too. He had a radiator business. It was called Sonny's Radiator Shop, and he was in business for almost 40 years in our little town. And he didn't make a lot of money, and he worked a lot of long hours. And but you know, it was. You know, we had everything we needed, right? And and he and my grandmother stepped in and raised me when they needed to, and so I'm like super grateful for them, and like they're like my heroes, you know. Like I literally just got a half leg sleeve of a tattoo for my grandparents, and so we'll show you that when it's all done. But it's really cool. It's got like, it's peace lilies from their at their funerals. Each one, it was a crazy story. I walked in, there was the funeral director was like, hey, there's a plant left in the thing if you want it. And I go in and there was like a white pot with a peace lily in it for my grandmother. And then about a year and a half later, my grandfather passed away. And it almost gave me chills, but they were like, hey, somebody left a plant in there if you want it. And I went in to go get it and it was a white pot with a peace lily. So I'm like, wow. So, I've kept these now for, it's been 13 years. They're literally right behind me. They go crazy. Like I planted them together and I'll probably try to keep them alive as long as I can. And I'm terrible with plants, but these are my grandparents. So I just got a big tattoo with peace lilies and stuff on my leg to kind of remember them. But yeah, you know, growing up, it was just like, we didn't have much. And then they moved away when I was like 13 or 14, because again, they were ready to retire at that time. And they moved to Branson, which was about 4 or 5 hours away. And then I was kind of like, I was bouncing around here and there, but yeah, lived in that truck for a while and was just playing drums and doing anything I could to make money, working any job I could.
So when you started the shop?
No. So back then I tried to start my grandfather's radiator shop back up again, because I had done that with him, And it worked for a little while, but I was working there. I was taking other jobs. I was playing drums. I was doing just a little bit of anything I could. Like, I was that kid. Like, now it's so funny because where I'm at now in life, so many young people, I hang out with a lot of young people, and they're like, and the young guys are like, man, how do you know how to do drywall? How do you know how to do electricity? How do you know how to do all these different things? And I'm like, I just would do anything to make money back then. You know what I mean? It was like, I was working a construction job. I was running heavy equipment. And then in the wintertime, we were building houses and subdivisions. So I would go into these houses and say, hey, I knew I had all the other skills. I would go into these houses and say, hey, this winter, when my construction job slows down, if you want your basement finished, I can finish your basement for you. And so I would just go in and like one just by myself, like I would frame an entire basement, finish it, drywall, electrical, everything.
Yeah.
And, you were hustling. Kind of help them out. Yeah. I was hustling. I just need to make money. And so,
who taught you that? Where'd you learn that?
So, you know, my grandfather was kind of taught me the lessons of like, hey, just learn. There's one of my favorite sayings, and I'm probably going to get it as a tattoo one time or some point, is I want to get learned to fish, right? Like, you know, give a man a fish, eats for a day, teach him to fish, eats for a lifetime. I love that. And that's what I always did, is I just like, it's kind of been my sort of like my motto through life, learn to fish, right? Like I would go work with anybody. If somebody was like, hey, we're hanging drywall today, you want to come and help? I'm like, yeah. And I would go help them for nothing if I had to, just to see what they were doing and how they did it and ask questions and learn. And so I was just able to do a lot of that growing up. You know, when you need money, you're willing to do just about anything. And so pay attention. Pretty much.
Steven can do a hell of a job on electrical too, if you, yeah. If you guys need to get a van together or something.
I can mess with 110. You don't touch 220, but hey, yeah. 110, yeah. No big yeah. deal.
I am. Yeah. If it's pretty straightforward, I'm good. When we get into like 3- and 4-way switches, I'm like, okay, maybe I'll get some help.
Bruce, remember those?
Steven showed
switches?
Me how to do. I had these, you know, Alexa connected switches, and he's like, oh yeah, just do this and like wired it up, and I was like, okay, cool. And he leaves, and I was like, I want to do this other one. Completely fry the kitchen. Everything's out for a week until a guy, it was just until Bob and Earl could come.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I've done a lot of that too. You know, that's how you learn, right? You got to mess it up first.
We won't be learning because we won't be doing it again. But
John, I think there are some entrepreneurs, something that we joke about is like, you know, there's some people that are thinking about their business 24/7. Nights, weekends, whatever, and you have a lot of hobbies and you do a lot of things outside of work, but yet you run a really big, successful, like one of the most successful shops, probably one of the cleanest in our industry. Was there a shift there for you where you got hobbies? Like, was there a before and after? I've only kind of known you as you know, someone that has balance.
Yeah, there definitely was. I mean, you know, early on, so I always say it like this, like, so, you know, one of the worst things that ever happened in my life was my son's health issues. But I think, and even if you asked him, I think one of the best things that happened in both of our lives was that, right? Like, it taught us a lot. We, just like you said earlier, you know, you're just going through life and you're doing your thing and you're plugging away and it's good times and bad times. But then when something like that happens, it really, I mean, it just puts the brakes on everything, you know, like, you know, my son was told a lot of times that he's, you know, or we were told that he's not going to be here. And, you know, and a couple times it was like, really like, hey, in 2 weeks, he's not going to be here, you know, and unless we get this treatment or unless this happens. And we just never gave up on that. But it made me, I wasn't a fun guy then, you know, like I was scared every day, you know what I mean? Like of what was going to happen. And I was running my business at the same time. You know, I can't take all the credit for that. Kathy, who has been with me since day one, Kathy is she's my aunt. She's a lot more like my mom. She's fantastic. She's always like sort of been there for me. When I started this business, she came in and I'm like, she goes, hey, I'll come and help you. And I was like, well, I can't pay you. We're not making really any money. And she goes, that's okay. I'll help you. She worked with me for about a year and a half and didn't take a dime just to. And I mean, like when I say work, we would put in 12, 15 hours a day, you know, doing like baseball jerseys and anything, you know, like kind of getting it going, getting it started. And Kathy's been there throughout. She's still there. She's really been a blessing in my life, like to this business isn't here without her. So she's one of the reasons now.
CEO type role, if you're, you know, to allow for your flexibility or hot.
Yeah. So, you know, it's crazy. Like, we don't really, he doesn't care about the title. She doesn't care about any of that. You know, really, she's in the office and she's inputting orders all day long. But I'm telling you, Kathy's the hardest working woman I've ever met in my life. And she's just, if I asked for her to do anything, it's done like in the next 5 minutes. You know, she doesn't put anything off. She gets right on it. She gets it done. And she's really she's been one of the big reasons we've been very successful. She's just a hard worker, you know? So like, she's always in that office and always doing her thing. And so that allowed me a lot of time to like work on the business while she was really working in the business. You know, I can't really take all the credit for building that place by myself, because really she built it just as much as me. And we even joke around that she's the boss and I work for her, you know? And so she's been a real blessing. But we, you know, I think when my son was sick, there was at one point we moved away for 6 months to do treatments, and she kept the shop going. Like, when he was in the hospital, we would, he would work at the shop. I would be in the hospital with him all day long, and she would take orders all day long at the shop. And then she would get done and she would come to the hospital and be with him. And I would go back home and like shower and then print all the orders and print everything that I could that night and get everything done like overnight while she stayed at the hospital. And then we would switch back and forth like that for sometimes weeks on end, you know, when he was really sick. And so, you know, I think without that teammate, I'm not there, you know, so I really owe her a lot. And I joke, I say Kathy's always gonna be the highest paid person in our shop, and she is. So like, when somebody gets a raise, she always smiles and she goes, cool, looks like I'm making more money now. I'm like, yes, you are. So, but during that time, like, it was just when my son was, you know, it changes your life. Like, you sit there and you think, like, I just kept telling myself, if he could ever be all right, you know, I would just, nothing would scare me anymore, right? Like, no business risks. I wouldn't worry about the things that I used to worry about. Like, you make all these like deals, right? To try to like, see if you can, you know, keep him around. And now he's good. So.
Which is amazing, by the way. Do you think that you've been successful because you weren't in the business as much?
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, I was still in it a lot early on. You know what I mean? Like, even honestly, until probably about 7 years ago, I was always the first one in and the last one out for the most part, just like every other owner, right? I was, hey, let's try this. Let's do this. Let's sell it this way. Let's try to fix the site. Let's do all these things. And so I did that for a long time, but then I was fortunate that, like, you know, I had a couple people that worked there. I have great employees. I mean, I have really long-term employees. And I have one guy that's been with me for like 16 years, and this guy drives an hour to work every single day, an hour each way. And, you know, fortunately now he's got a lot of remote days and we're taking care of him that way. But like, just really, really dedicated people to Logo Daddy, right? These guys, this is going to be their career. They started it there and they're going to end it there. And I've empowered them where I'm just like, hey, I want you guys, like my production manager, Kurt's done a great job. He's been with me almost like 11 or 12 years now. And he came in as an artist. And now Kurt has, I don't question any decisions that they make. You know what I mean? Like, they can do what they need to do. And I trust, you know, I know that they have our best interests at heart. And they're going to make mistakes, and that's okay. I think that's where I see a lot of business owners, you know, they're too controlling or they want to be over each thing.
At that 7 year ago, Mark, what was the org chart that, you know, when that shift happened, what did the org look like?
At that time, we really didn't have a production manager. That was kind of me, you know, I was just coming in and I would get our printing team, like, hey, Kathy and I, you know, she would go down and sort a lot of the orders and we would have everything staged. And then we would just have, you know, our printers come in and print everything. And we just really didn't have, it was kind of still just her and I doing it. And then when we started getting busier, we put Kurt as our production manager and we started just working with him, and that really changed it, man. That took a lot of weight, you know, a lot of shop owners are the production manager role. Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest one in the shop, really.
What gave you a sense that he was the right person for the, for that fit? Or was it just like, let's just give it a shot and see?
So he was, Kurt was always really organized. You know, that was something, I hired him as an artist, and he would, he's the guy that he would come in and we would give him, you know, 5,000 names and numbers to key in and do all this stuff. And he did it perfectly. And he was just always super organized with everything. And I mean, every day I could look and he'd have a notebook that was just, you know, he'd just checking through the list of all these things. And so it was crazy because he was actually looking for probably something else. Like we weren't what we needed to be for him at that time. And then I said, hey, what would you think about a production manager opportunity? And he kind of sat down and had a heart to heart with me. He was like, hey, I've always wanted to maybe own my own business. He goes, you know, I didn't know it would be this or whatever, but he goes, I really feel like an ownership role would be, I would enjoy that and take a lot of pride in it. And so we put him in that spot, and honestly, he's flourished. I mean, he's like night and day different guy. And he's really right now the backbone of our shop. I mean, he's in there getting it done every single day. We're having a record year and we're just pushing stuff at him left and right. And he's finding a way to get it done. And he's doing a great job. And we're talking about moving him up sort of just to being our operations manager next, as soon as we replace him in the position he's in now.
So it's like those two roles seems like huge. Kathy, obviously being a right-hand person, you know.
John, what is, okay, like, I think people listening to this are like, I don't have a John or a Kat, or I don't have, you know, a Kathy, right? Like, I don't have that person. It's those people, like, you have to, it's not like you can just put a job posting out, right? They sort of have to fall in your lap. Something serendipitous happens. For me, you know, I have Watson, who's our CFO, and Adam, VP of sports. Like, we're the three-man weave. I like to say that Watson knows what passes I'm going to drop ahead of time. And he's the opposite of me. What do you see in them that's different from you that, like, are your voids? For instance, like, where are your weaknesses and where are their strengths?
Oh, absolutely. There's a ton of them. So my weaknesses, so I'm great with... I don't know. Like, I say that I have the easiest job in the shop, right? Like, I'm good with relationships. I have been really, really fortunate. I go out and have fun and meet people, and we just become great friends, and they own businesses and so on and so forth. And I've been able to, like, sort of create this really good pull for clients here in St. Louis with some big clients. It has been really, really beneficial in the last like 4 or 5 years to us. And these guys get it done. Like, I'm terrible at paperwork. I mean, I'm that guy that, like, an important email can sit there for like quite a while, and it's just like stresses me out, and I don't want to get back to it, or it takes me a long time to get it done. And those two are not like that. Like, Kathy, like, anything. I mean, it can be just getting, you know, something signed with taxes or whatever. You know, they joke around. They're like, we're just going to get a stamp.
Wait, like, Steven, you don't think you could find that role from job posting?
Well,
you can, but it's hard because
you can't. Yeah, you can, because I think when we interview people, this is the problem that I have. When we interview, like, we're very stubborn entrepreneurs, right? We're very one-dimensional. We have tunnel vision on. When we hire someone, we just see the things that are like, ooh, I like that about them. I like that about them. I like that about them. And we actually don't hire for our weaknesses, our personal weaknesses. We hire in things that we relate to because we're not good interviewers. Until you find those people that, like, are very close in your life or that can check you, like Aunt Kathy can probably check your ass if she needs to, you know. And in my world, Watson can check me anytime, like, you know. And I think that's really hard to do.
You know, I think it's like anything. So let's say you're a musician, right? And you're out gigging with bands or you're doing whatever you're doing. How many musicians actually become, you know, whatever, Aerosmith or Guns N' Roses or like these big bands, you know what I mean? Like, it only, you just get lucky, right? And you land into something. And I think it's the same way in business at different levels. I think that something fortunate happens or the right people come along. I've been really, really blessed. Felt like when everything went through with my son, like, man, some really big blessings came into my life with, like, the right people. You know what I mean? Like, the right people started falling into place. There's been a lot of times when I'm like, man, I really need to hire somebody for this. And then, like, you know, Kathy would be like, hey, somebody called yesterday and they were interested in, you know, they were looking for a job and this is what their strong suit is. And I'm like, okay, bring them in. And then we would just bring them in and we would talk to, you know, like, that happened with Kurt a long time ago when we were looking for an artist, you know, that's how Kurt came in. And
also good, like, were there five other Kurt, people before Kurt that didn't work out? Yeah. And then,
yeah, there has been.
So were you good? Were you saying at cutting it as in this wasn't a good fit and moving on to find the Kurt?
I've become better at that, but it was hard. You know, I'm probably too nice of a guy at times, and I let people stick around longer than they should have at times. But I've, you know, in the last probably 4 or 5 years, you know, we look at the numbers a lot now. And so if somebody's not making sense with our numbers or they're not producing what we feel they should be, we cut that a little quicker now. But we've been really fortunate, man. We have a small team now. I think we're only down around, I think we're around 20 now.
What do you mean not making sense with the numbers?
Well, like if, you know, if we're paying somebody, you know, $60,000-$70,000 a year and we're not seeing them, you know, generate the numbers, or we're just not seeing them being the team player that we want, you know, or, you know, they're calling in, or, you know, there's always an excuse for something like that. We just get rid of those people right away. Now we don't have time for that, you know, so.
Have you ever seen an instance, you know, when you hire that employee and then a month later, you're like, uh-oh. I have never seen that situation work out.
Never. But we're so optimistic. We're Every so employee. Optimistic. Oh, we make more excuses than they probably do. Oh, they, you know, that it was just a one.
Yeah, because you want to be, I mean, you know, it's hard to make a bad choice, and it's hard to even admit when you made a bad choice and to move past it. But it's better just to cut that loss. We just had something like that happen. I mean, there was a guy who worked with one of our biggest customers, and he was fantastic, and we're great friends. He's a wonderful guy. He's a really smart young guy, and he lost the job there. It was just like a numbers game for them, and he got his number came up, and so I had an opportunity to hire him, and I was like, man, this guy is going to be incredible. He's going to be able to come in and you know, do a lot of the AI stuff that we're wanting to do and just make things run smoother. And it just didn't pan out. And we figured out that it wasn't going to pan out in about the first 3 months. And he's moved on and doing something else already. And we had to cut that short pretty quick. But you know, nothing against him. Great guy. But just didn't work out with us, you know. It didn't work out as much for him as it didn't work out as much for us. So it just wasn't a good fit.
And this guy listened to Jason Fried, who started this company called Basecamp software company. Anyway, he said they don't do performance reviews. All they do is ask each other, would we rehire this person at that time? Just yes or no. It's a very simple question. And that's the performance review. So I love trying to make it a little bit more black and white.
There are things that stress you out in the business, and there are things that make you probably anxious when you see them. Can you maybe go back in time to a John 10 years ago versus today? And how do you respond to those things?
Super different, because, you know, 10 years ago, I was in, like, you know, you go through phases, and that was kind of like my post, you know, to go back, circle back to that post. I've just been really, really grateful lately. And I've been really, you know, as I'm getting older, it's hard for me to get older. I feel like I'm stressed about that, because I'm like, I do feel like there's a time limit. And I was always the young I was
turning like 35 next week, or what's your?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm telling everybody. But I just turned 50, and so that was hard for me. It's like 40 was hard, and 50 was even harder, because I'm like, man, I don't feel that old. You know what I mean? But like 10 years ago, I was stressed out with everything. Well, probably more than 10 years ago. 10 years ago, it was getting better. Things were getting better. But like really all through my 30s, when I was building this business and John and my son was sick, I just didn't think, I was at like the lowest point in my life. I was just struggling to hang on. I was like, you know, everything was week to week, always. The business was, we weren't making a lot of money. And then my kiddo was really sick, and that was all up in the air. And so it was just a really, really, I've been in the lowest place of my life at that time. And I was like, you know, again, in my post, I said that, I go, I thought it was only other people that would get, you know, the things like I have now. And I was like, I don't think I'm ever going to get there. And then, you know, the small wins start piling up, right? Like you have a small win with one thing, and it just keeps adding up. And, you know, and eventually my son was kind of turned a corner and was doing better and very stable. which then I was like, okay, cool. Now I can really like dial in on the business. And then the business started doing a little better and I was spending more time in it. And then I met my wife and, you know, she took a lot of weight off of me too, because my wife has a very successful career. She does very well. And so it was like, I don't have to be the only winner. You know what I mean? Like I don't have, everything isn't reliant on me. I can have a bad month, year, week, whatever, and we're okay. And so that, just taking that pressure off and being able to like, honestly, it's almost like just relaxing. You know what I mean? I think some people stress so much that they get in their own way. And so I think just relaxing and going, okay, cool, we're good. Let's focus on what we really need to do. And that's, it just started turning, you know, like, I guess, I don't know if you want to say it's like my luck started to shift or things like that. I'm definitely, I don't think this is all because of something that I've done. I think that I'm very, very fortunate and good things have always came my way, but I've worked really hard along the way to make that happen. But I think, but 10 years ago, I was always stressed. Now, nothing stresses me.
If you could go back in time and give that 35 or 40, you know, year old John some advice, what would you tell him now? And I think it's almost like you're giving advice to those shop owners that are in those modes right now. What advice would you give them that he needed to hear?
Back in that time, I'll give the same advice my grandfather used to give me. It was funny because at the time I was like, it used to kind of almost, it didn't piss me off, but it upset me. I would call him and I would be like, this is going wrong and that's going wrong and I'm stressed and I'm, you know, I'm having all these problems and blah, 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 blah. And he would just listen. And then at the end, I'm thinking like, he's going to give me this great revelation of advice. And he would go, John, stop worrying about everything. Everything works itself out in time and it's going to be fine. And he goes, you're going to see that all these problems will solve themselves and you'll make it through all these things. And he goes, everything's going to work itself out. And at the time I was like, you know what? This is terrible advice. Like you're supposed to tell me what I'm supposed to do. And you're supposed to give me all this like great knowledge. And you're just telling me that it's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, this is, that doesn't sound right. But you know, he was right. It is going to be fine. And things are going to work themselves out. You're going to have problems every single day. You're going to work through the small ones. But I think the biggest thing is you just have to, you know, it's you said it earlier, you know, I'm in these text groups and I've been a little bit quiet in a lot of our like our industry groups because I'm not focused on work every day. You know, I have those teammates in there and I'm, you know, just this morning, I got a phone call. Kathy actually went to the hospital on Saturday and has pneumonia. And I'm like, what? Why didn't you call me and tell me this? So that's a big thing, you know, like she's family and she's also like my main person there. It's okay. We have people that are going to cover it. I don't worry about that. You know what I mean? I just want to make sure she's taken care of and she's okay. And then the job will, the work will get done because we have good processes and everything's fine.
What about the moves? What moves would you tell your younger self? Like, would it be, you know,
yeah,
buy this thing sooner or hire that person now or delay that or don't spend so much or like really, really kind of tactical things.
Yeah. So I think the biggest change in my business was being able to buy the buildings, right? Like, and I know everybody's not in that same situation. Some places are, we were in a spot where we could buy, man, my first building that we bought, well, we started leasing it at first because we needed a storefront, but it was like a oil change facility, you know, almost like a Jiffy Lube type thing. So the pit where they would go to change the oil was actually like our print shop. We literally like cut an 8-foot hole in this concrete floor so we could crane lifts down. If you would have seen it, it was crazy. Like we would crane all the presses and everything down into the basement of this place. Presses would come in, we would just throw them down the stairs. But it was like, we made the building work for like 8 or 9 years. And, but I bought it very inexpensively at the time and was able to sell it and do really well on it because we turned it into something that people saw value in. They were like, wow, you know, Logo Daddy's been there and they've had this successful business. This building's worth a lot. So we made good money on that building. Then we bought our next building. And we bought our next building. It's a crazy story. I'll tell it quick. So there was a guy, he was a bail bondsman in our town, in this town that I bought this building. So bail bondsmen's, most people don't like them, right? You know what I mean? They're kind of they're like, you know, they can be a little bit rough around the edges. And so this guy owned a lot of property in this place. And so he was asking, you know, maybe like $500,000 for this building we were looking at. And I was like, man, it needs way too much work. I was only really willing to pay like 300 and maybe 25 or 50. So I go to lunch with this guy, but these are the kind of things that I did that people go, you're crazy for doing this.
What was
but
the size
I did
of
it? And it worked out. It was like 10,000 square feet. And then we ended up putting another building up over there. But like, so I go to lunch with this guy and I say, hey, you know, his name's Chuck. I go, hey, Chuck, here's the deal, man. I go, and again, this is small town stuff. Like he grew up in my town with my, he knew my grandfather and stuff like that. Said, hey, I don't think the building's worth more than this because I want to do all these renovations to it. And I want to update it and all this stuff. And by the time I get there, I'm going to have too much money in it. Long story short, we're literally over lunch. He tells me a story. He goes, he kind of hears me out. And I mean, I'm coming in $150,000 less than what he wants to sell this building for, you know, quite a bit less. And he hears me out and he sits there and he goes, John, I'm going to tell you a story about your grandfather. And I go, yeah. He goes, I went to his shop one day on a Saturday and he goes, I had a date that night and I got a hole in my radiator or whatever, you know, his car was overheating or something. And he goes, I stopped by on a Saturday, like afternoon, and he was closed, but he walked outside, you know, his shop was at his house and he walked out and he goes, hey, Sonny, you know, my radiator, my car's overheating or whatever. And so my grandfather dropped whatever he was doing and helped him out, took the thing out, fixed it or whatever, and got him back going again. Because he had told him he had a date that night, you know? And so then he goes, well, what do I owe you, Sonny? And he goes, you know what? He goes, don't worry about it. Just, he goes, spend it on your date tonight. And so he goes, because your grandfather did that for me. He goes, I'm going to save you $150,000 and sell you that building.
Whoa.
Hey, and I was
that's
like,
karma.
I was like, hey, thanks, Gramps. You know, you saved me a lot of money on that one.
That's incredible.
But again, buying that building, and then when we sold it, we did very well on that building too. Those are huge wins because when you can stack some money and invest into the next building, you know, you're doing good. So that's why, like now, you know, the building we have now, that's what I was able to do is we put, you know, we were able to put a lot into that.
So that's a big one. Buy the building as early as you possibly can.
I mean, everybody does that differently. I know people that lease and they do very, very well that way. And it works out way better for them that way. But for me, it was always, I've always been really, really fortunate to do well on the properties.
What else?
Like that.
What else would you tell yourself to do, buy, or?
I think that you have to have the right equipment, right? My thought process was always, if we don't succeed, it's not going to be because we didn't have something that we needed. You know what I mean? Like, I think some people cut corners or they're like, hey, we're going to try to get the, you know, we're going to order this machine that from, you know, somewhere else. Like, we're going to order this from China and get it in here because it's, you know, $2,000 cheaper or something like that. But it doesn't have any instructions. And when it breaks, you got to fix it and all these things. Like,
we've got episodes documenting that.
Yeah. Just buy what you need. You know what I mean? Like they sell it, you know, it's like.
But okay. So what does that mean? So you're saying go with a reputable brand, one of the bigger brands.
Yeah. For me, it's support. You know what I mean? It's like, that's what I love about, you know, honestly, my plug for Rock would be, that's what they've been great with that with us. Like we always want to, you know, I'm just going to buy the right press and get great support and get great, you know, we can't have our presses be down or anything be down. So that's something that I think that some people are always trying to cut corners everywhere they can and save money. I think that you have to spend money to make money, buy good equipment, give your team, you know what I mean? Like I want my team again. That's like, we joke. I know so many shops don't have, HVAC and things like that. We just spent $175,000 putting 14 new units on top of our roof because it's 73 degrees in my shop, like in the middle of the day when we're printing and it's 110 outside, you know, and my team feels that, you know? And so like, I just think put people in a good workspace, give them good equipment, make it a good place to work. You know, we've automated so many things. I think that's huge. As soon as you can automate, you should automate because the work we're doing now, you know, we're doing work that if we were doing it the way when we started out, like the old manual way, I would need 45 employees to keep up with what we're doing right now. And we do it with 20.
John, when did industry relationships start becoming important for you? Like, is there a corner that started to turn? Because you talk about like the people, I've just heard this like underlying theme of relationships, but also like in the industry, you've leaned on that quite a bit. When did that start for you?
Honestly, it started with like probably Ryan and some of the guys. Like I would just go to shows. You know, we started going to shows about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. And I mean, Print Hustlers and all the things, you know, and they were fantastic and just meeting other people in the industry and kind of making friends. But then, you know, you start meeting you know, I met Ryan and Ross, and then like just became really good friends with those guys. And it was just great to have, like, when I went to them to talk about equipment, I didn't feel like I was talking to an equipment salesman. I felt like I was talking to my buddy, right? Like I was, you know, it'd be just like with you, Steven, there was, you know, like you had some taggers, right? And I'm like, hey dude, where'd you get those and whatever. You're like, yeah, I got an extra one. I'll sell it to you. You know, it was like that kind of, it felt like that kind of a transaction. But now those people, you know, I'm great friends with, you know, like Jared Granberry and just like, you know, so many people that, and honestly, like one of my really good friends is Keith Patillo. He's the CEO of Grimco. And so those are huge relationships. I mean, we get treated very, very well from these suppliers. Sometimes not only based on the relationship, they treat a lot of people well, but like I feel like we definitely get treated as good or better than anybody because of these relationships. And it's all the way through the industry. But honestly, it's, you know, I don't know. It's like I would take care of them too. If those guys came to me to get an apparel order printed, I don't know, probably I'm going to print it cheaper, do whatever they need and not charge them that much. And I'm going to take good care of them. I think that's the key, is like just making good relationships in this industry with not necessarily like, you know, with the suppliers, but just with everybody. Like, I mean, I have so many friends, you know, now I feel like I could call anybody and ask their advice and they're going to tell me exactly how they do it in their shop, and they don't, you know, they're not worried about it.
If you were starting over, would you be buying the same stuff? One thing Steve and I was talking about is that, how everything's changed so much, and would you be more of a sales org, or would you still be, you know, printing a lot in house?
I think I would be printing a lot in house only because that's me, right? Like I'm a hands-on kind of guy. The sales organization sort of scares me because like I don't know enough about it. You know what I mean? Like I would, like when I think about the print on demand model, I'm like, man, this is so incredibly lucrative, and it could be if it's done right, but I don't know how to do it right. You know what I mean? Like that's not what I'm good at. It's like setting up, I can't set up a website that talks well with the production and all that kind of stuff, but I'm really good hands-on, like just physically making the stuff. And so I would probably lean towards that. And I'm actually stoked that I have the customers I have, because my customers are more like a contract customer that just send us the jobs ready to go, and then we do a good job with that. But I would definitely do it differently now. You have to. Like when I started, you could still just, you know, I mean, you could make a lot of money just with a manual press and an auto. And now, I mean, DTF is so huge and there's so much market share of that. It's like, I think that you could just outsource so much now and do really well as a sales organization if somebody was starting up today.
John, if you could give a shop owner advice. You are not in your shop right now. It is Monday morning. You're in your beautiful condo that overlooks Busch Stadium, which you guys downsized to, which is a super cool story. There you go. Cardinals kind of suck right now, but that's okay. Yeah. Go Cubs.
That's all right.
How many hours a week do you think a shop owner should be in their shop versus out of their shop, just letting their people run without
yeah.
If you could give like an hour.
I would say that it depends on where you're at and it depends on what you want, right? If a shop owner wants to be, I don't know, I would say early on, I was in my shop a lot. I think you're there more than anybody. But then I think somewhere, you know, if you look around year, you know, like if you say, hey, in the first 5 years, you're there all the time. In the next 5 years, you know, maybe somebody's doing that with you a little bit, or you kind of have a partner that you can lean on a little bit. In the next 5 years after that, I think you need to start giving up some control and letting your team start handling things. Or this has been the way we've done it. And now we're in our, you know, we're getting closer to like 19 years now, almost 20 years. And Monday, and I'm not there. And we've had some, you know, I said, there's somebody, you know, we had a few people call out today. It's a busy week for us. And I'm not worried about it at all, because I know that my team that's theirs working through the problems the same way that I would be doing it if I was there, you know? And so I think that once you get, for me, the trade-off is, I was thinking about this morning before the call. If I could make another, if somebody said, hey, if you're in your shop all the time and you never stop thinking about this and you can make another $100,000 a year versus what I make over what I make now, I wouldn't take that deal. I don't want that. You know what I mean? Like that money isn't important to me. What's important to me is my freedom and my time and, you know, just being able to travel and do you know, like with my wife when she works and she travels for work, I'm able to like kind of tag along. We're able to do industry shows. We're able to do things like that. And I think those keep our relationships good in the industry and can kind of also make us money in some ways, you know what I mean? Or save us money. But like, I think you got to work yourself out of it unless you just enjoy working. I mean, I know so many shop owners that are like, they're there constantly. And I'm like, I guess they must love it because they think about it all the time. But like sometimes even in our text groups, you know, I love all these guys, but I'm like going, hey, it's Saturday. Get on a boat, have a beer, like do something, you know, like go for a walk, go touch grass. You know what I mean? Like get out of that shop. Quit telling me you're going to change this 3% and it's going to do this over the next, like, I don't care. Go enjoy your life.
So where does it go for in a year? Like, what does Logo Daddy look like in a year? Is it, hey, I'm happy as is. I don't want more people. I don't want less people. This is a really great sweet spot.
Yeah. We went through a spot where I was like, man, should we grow? We had an opportunity to maybe double in size and, really kind of go all in again. And yeah, it was pretty recent. And honestly, it was one of those things, like I said, usually when something big like that was going to transpire for me, like I kind of got like it just sort of started falling into place. And this thing kept not falling into place. It actually kept falling out of place. And then I found myself working really hard to keep it falling into place. And then I was like, why am I doing that? You know what I mean? Is it like, maybe this isn't the right thing, you know? And so I just kind of, I don't want to say I gave up on it, but I just was like, hey, we'll just let it do its thing. And in time, we'll see where it goes from there. And, but now I'm very happy with where we're at. We're having a fantastic year. We've did a lot of work with Nick at Print Profit on, you know, dialing things in. We're very, very profitable this year. And the end of the year is looking great, you know, and there's really no signs of it stopping. We're going to have continual growth with some of our big companies. And, so it's like, things are just going, you know, it's like, I'm in like a, you know, you guys talk about a flow state. I feel like the business is kind of in that flow state, but I'm also just, I also know that it can go away. You know what I mean? Like, I think.
Is that what triggered you to want to do that big growth decision?
Yeah, it was a couple things. There was a few things with that. That, you know, I can't talk about a lot, but it was a few different things that it was like, it felt like the right thing for a while. And then it started to not, you know, it was just an incredible opportunity that I had in front of me. And I was, you know, I thought it would be a very lucrative opportunity, but then it, you know, like I said, it just kept getting harder and harder. And it was with a good friend. And so, you know, the friendship is very, very valuable. And I would rather stay great friends with somebody than make $1 million more a year. The money doesn't, I mean, obviously money matters to everybody, and I'm not going to say money doesn't matter. We live a fantastic life and it's not an inexpensive one, but money isn't that important to me. You know, I learned a lot with my kiddo about what is important. And so, you know, for me, it's not like, oh, I want to make another, you know, $1 million this year or something like that. That doesn't matter to me. You know, I'm very happy where I'm at.
It's funny. It's like, it's yes, you were correct. And it's nice to renovate a 1970 Scout, you know,
yeah,
the statue.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for like 150K.
John, I think what's really cool is like you're going on, just turned 50. You've been in business for 20 years and you seem to, even though you've like been through these trials and tribulations, you've exhibited a lot of patience. What can you tell shop owners? I heard this quote the other day. It says, wealth is built in patience. And it seems like, obviously, in a point of your life, you've built some great wealth. What advice can you give to others about just being patient?
Yeah, you're right. I've probably been patient without thinking that I was being patient. You know what I mean? Like, there was a lot of things that made me wait. Because I'm definitely not a very patient person. I'm like, I want to get things done quickly, but there's a lot of things that made me wait, you know, stuff that went on with my son and even just in business. Like, there's times when you can't afford the thing that you need and you just got to wait, you know? This last thing that I was just talking about, that took a lot of patience. Like, I really wanted that to happen way sooner and it just kept not happening. And now, you know, I just let it go. I'm like, hey, I'm not going to worry about it. If it happens, it happens. But yeah, patience is a virtue, right? Like you have to give things time to do what they're going to do. And, you know, almost going back to like what my grandfather said, things are going to work themselves out. Back then, that wasn't good advice because I was like, no, I need an answer now. I have a problem. I need to solve it. But the truth is the problem's going to solve itself. Just will, you know, and some young guys, I feel like, you know, you guys are both young guys and you guys are going hard right now. And like with, you know, Steven, I know you're constantly building and doing all these things. My advice to you would just be like, make sure that you're spending time enjoying it too. And you do seem like that you do. And I like that. I love seeing your posts at the, when you were at the lake and doing all the things like that. But it's like, those times are important. That's why we're doing all this, right? Like, this is just, I think sometimes that's what I want to say to some owners is like, life is not what you're doing at work. It's what you're doing outside of work. So, work is just a tool that gets you to do the things outside of work.
Hey, what a best way to end the episode. Yeah. Thanks, John, for sharing your wisdom, the 50 years of wisdom. Printhusters, we appreciate you guys always joining us for this week's episode, and we will see you on the next one. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.